This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good morning. Saturday, August 21st, 2010. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. On this show, we'd like to give you the tools and tips about being prepared for when disaster strikes your home or your business, your neighborhood, and things of that nature. We'd like to make the proverbial toolbox of contact information and things you should have on the ready for when something unfortunately happens to your home or your business. Those disasters encapsulate into fires and floods and trees through houses. Yeah, I've been on many car impacts on homes also. And there's also some oddball type of disasters that happens if you're going on vacation, a raccoon gets in your house and just tears it apart and goes bad. It's on your peanut butter. But I'm a big proponent of being prepared. It seems like it's a dead issue, but you know, constantly being prepared. It's just like cleaning your teeth. Okay, you know, you're not going to have cavities if you maintain your teeth and your gums, and it's the same thing with disasters. Okay, because most times when I arrive at your home or your place of business, it's that deer in the headlights look, and you're asking me several questions all at once, and before I even got to the first one to answer it, you're on to the 12th one. So my job here is to try to help you get that anxiety out of the way. Okay, listen, if something does happen, boom, I'm going to do this. Here are the steps that I was recommended. And I'm just reiterating or regurgitating. Some of these things that I'll be telling you, they come straight out of from the Red Cross and also from insurance policies. As a policy owner, some of the verbiage in your policy, standard policy verbiage, is to mitigate further damage. You'd be responsible to mitigate further damage. Mitigating meaning prevent further damage. And that's also if you live in a condo association, live in the building. There are steps that you're supposed to take as an individual to prevent further damage, which kind of leads me into my standard stock tips that I like to give. Not stock tips because I'm not in the financial world, but everybody should know local evacuation routes, whether inside the home or even in your neighborhood. For example, you know, my neighborhood, there's only one way in, one way out. It branches off into four different directions. And this past March 13th with the storms, the main power was shut down. No one could get in or out. So they had to do emergency tree removal and also the live wires over there. Several people had to be evacuated. But then the fire department did a heck of a job doing that. So knowing your emergency routes it's very key. Also, a floor plan. You know, now going back to your place of business, everybody has a floor plan in a place of business. It's part of the building code as to what it's a commercial space. Is the here's the exit. This is the way you go in case a fire happens. This happens if something happens, an impact on the other side of the room. Also, regarding disabilities, people with in wheelchairs or walkers or canes and such like that, you should have supplies for them, whether it's the commercial space or the residential. We like to make that disaster supply kit. You know, that should be on hand, which is your first aid items, your non-perishable goods, batteries, backup batteries for in this age of electronics. Everyone should have a backup cell phone because everyone's scrolling down looking for contact information. No one really writes anything down anymore. But you know what? The old pen and pad kind of thing, it's still needed, which also tends, where the contact information, contact emergency numbers. They should be by your phone. Or, not just in your phone, but in the house or the place of business. There's your 911. Everyone knows that phone number. You should have your plumber. You should have your electrician. You should have your insurance agent or your insurance broker. Those or your building management. Those are key numbers because you don't necessarily need to dial 911 for a little leak. Or even if you have a little issue on your stove. I mean, you don't need to call in the cavalry on that kind of thing. But there could be damage from that. And, again, being responsible as a homeowner or a business owner or a policy owner, you should notify somebody and say, listen, I had an incident. This is what I did. This is how I went around. Do you recommend anything else? So, and I'll constantly reiterate that throughout the show. It's always about being prepared. I don't want to say anything, but I was a Boy Scout, so I was prepared fairly well until later on. But we'll get to some other things. But regarding some more of these disaster tips, I was reading an article the other day from the Canadian Red Cross. And, you know, there's really no difference in the Canadian Red Cross, American Red Cross. I'm sure they have the same protocols and formats. But they were being sponsored by a local mall up there for a disaster cookout. And what they did was they brought in some firemen, and those guys were, you know, they like to cook because half the time they're cooking, the other time they're on fire. So they cut the power. They gave them no water, and they gave them just your standard rudimentary foods that would be in a kitchen. Now, they couldn't use non-perishable items. I mean, they had to use non-perishable items. So they came up with some funky ways of nutritional foods for a family of four. But again, you know, this is in the Red Cross is doing this, again, as a preparedness when something happens, because people get trapped in their homes, whether it's through storm related or if it could be some other natural disaster. Some of the things that they keep on talking about is you should promote a 72-hour preparedness. That's 2 gallons of water per person per day. Non-perishable items, your medicines, having your scripts is very important. Your dosage, those are very important. Because if you need to go to the pharmacy and on emergency and you're not registered there, they're not going to know what you take. So you should also have candles, waterproof matches, and even identification, a credit card and some cash. So having these items in your home or in place of business is important. Again, more examples are when you were younger and you had to take tests, and you know, if you did not study for those tests, you know, the anxiety came upon you when you weren't prepared. Again, preparedness. And one of the things I like to talk about is when you have to contact the people who are responsible for your properties. If you're not prepared, you don't know what are their standards for remediating your personal property, if it's in a commercial space and if it's your home. You know, people have condos and co-ops. They're different policy configurations, I should say. So not knowing if you are possession of – you own the walls, the ceilings, the floors, or is it just the furniture of yours, the personal property that's going to be – that is damaged, who's going to pay for it, and how are you going to retrieve those monies if you have to come up front? So having these items are important, and talking about that Red Cross situation, that's you know, that's a number you should also possess with your other contact information. I know I talked about it before. I kind of jumped around there for a little bit, because when it gets into these preparedness, there's so many little facets that make up your proverbial toolkit, things that you should possess and have. And also, you know, we talked about major arteries of getting out of neighborhoods, and even people who live down the shore areas or out on the island, they have evacuation routes. You should have those things in your house, too. And you should have a dry drill, if you will, knowing where the kids are. And you should have also, you know, who, in the case of an emergency, who you're calling family-wise, relatives, if you have the kids or you have grandma or your mother-in-law, where can they stay while things are being rehabilitated at your home, when the recovery process is in effect and moving forward. So when these situations do occur in vast areas or neighborhoods like they did this past March, which talks about we talked about generators last week. I want to thank Danny O'Brien from Academy Electric and Electrical Power Systems. He gave us some fine tips on what to do regarding not having power in a particular area, whether it's commercial or residential. And if he could help out, or if I could help out, we also touched on that too. In the next segment, we'll be speaking with Bruce Wolf. He's from Garden State Environmental here in Bergen County, and he services the tri-state area. Bruce is a certified industrial hygienist regarding, some interesting things, especially nowadays, which is very, very much in the forefront of the news and the media, is mold growth and air quality. These things are super important because of the amount of people that have asthma nowadays and allergies, and people don't know why they're continually sick. And if you just joined us, again, my name is Chris Plunkett. This is Disaster Recovery Hour, 9:70 a.m. on the Apple. On the upcoming segment, like I said, we'll be talking with Bruce Wolf, certified industrial hygienist from Garden State Environmental. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
You're listening to Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. And for more information, if you like, you can go to my website, CPP Emergency Services, or I should say CPPEMS.com. I always have that emergency service thing that pops out of my mouth. But dealing with disasters, and if you need to contact me, you'd also call at 201-489-5983. And also, you know what, get my cell number, 917-567-9333. And my email is cplunkett@cppems.com. My guest today is Bruce Wolf. He is a certified industrial hygienist from Garden State Environmental out here in Bergen County. Services the tri-state area. Good to have you, Bruce.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Bruce and I have been working about a half a dozen years together. It always seems to be, I'm a very fortunate individual. I run into people who have the same sense of work ethic and sense of urgency and wanting to do the right thing, like my past guests, and Bruce is no different than those guys and myself. So, Bruce, why don't you give a little background on the company and what you do?
Sure. Well, Garden State Environmental is a industrial hygiene and health and safety company. We've been in business about 25 years. We have clients in the public sector, the private sector, government agencies, schools, commercial properties, as well as homeowners. And essentially, we provide environmental consulting services with a focus on indoor air quality, water intrusion and mold, and a variety of hazardous exposures that can impact on people's health. So we work very hard to help people and companies and agencies not only prevent those kind of exposures, but deal with them once they occur.
Mm. You know, I see mold testers on sides of vans and on websites, and they're really actually they're mold remediation companies, but they're doing their own testing, and I always thought that was the rooster guarding the hen house. I always thought a TPA, third-party administrator, should be handling those types of things. Are you in agreement on that?
I agree. I think there's an inherent conflict of interest when the company does remediation and testing.
Now, is there a difference between industrial hygienist and a certified industrial hygienist? Is there schoolings of degrees there?
Well, it's not so much the education. An industrial hygienist is a scientist. It's really an interesting combination of a scientist, an environmental investigator, a health and safety advocate, and a problem solver. Industrial hygienists typically have a minimum of bachelor degree in industrial hygiene or environmental science. Many have graduate level degrees and extensive experience. Once you accomplish that, you can then sit for the CIH exam, which would then allow you to call yourself a certified industrial hygienist. Okay. So that's really the only difference.
Okay. Which would give more credibility to your profession.
Yes, it does, but it doesn't automatically mean that someone is an expert in everything.
Okay.
So you have to be careful that you don't get too impressed with initials and you focus more on the experience and credentials, the other credentials of that person.
Right, yeah. You see business cards and they have every letter in the alphabet in the end. And, you know, really, you're going to say, what does that mean? No one's going to ask you. No one's going to call you on the carpet, right?
Yeah, when you have a trifold card to get all the letters in, you know, you're in trouble.
I just leave mine at BS. So, we'll jump right into the deep end, you know, because when I go on jobs, a lot of people, homeowners, and especially if they have children who have, allergies or asthma and things of that nature, they are always asking, what about mold? And it's a very delicate situation to be put in because I'm not a hygienist, but I've seen enough, you know, to know what mold is and how it could migrate and so on and so forth. What are the common environmental issues that you are being called on a continual basis?
Well, we focus on indoor air quality issues, and as you can imagine, that's a large umbrella. That covers a lot of areas. It certainly covers microbial growth, mold and bacteria that might grow as a result of water intrusion. It includes things like asbestos and lead paint, carbon monoxide, dust mites, bed bugs, chemical exposures. There's a whole world of hazards that people face at home and at work. And so within the rubric of indoor air quality, certainly the topic that elicits high levels of emotion is mold. It's one of those words that gets people upset and worried. We have the media to thank for that. Everyone has seen the headlines, black killer mold from outer space. Mm-hmm. We had to blow our house up. We have to evacuate the school. You know, all kinds of sensational headlines.
Yeah, Dan Rather did something on that, didn't he? About 48 hours.
Huh? There's been a million of them, and, you know, it did a nice job of scaring people. On the other side of the issue, you have people who say, well, gee, mold is everywhere. It's been around for millions of years. It's been around longer than we have. What's the big deal? The truth is that the answer lies somewhere in between, that there are, in fact, health risks related to mold exposure. It's not a clear-cut dose-response relationship because everyone's immune system is a little bit different. Mm. So it depends on how your system reacts.
So does a doctor need to, say, for example, you set a protocol, a scope of work that needs to be done, and then the homeowner or the business owner saying, listen, I have an employee or I have my son, he's extremely ill about this. Now, do you look at that medical data or does it need to go up the ladder to somewhere else? Or not, I shouldn't say ladder, but a horizontal ladder, whichever you want to talk about. Does someone need to sign off on that or you have the ability to do that too?
Well, we really see ourselves as part of the team in this kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. We provide the environmental data, and if there's a medical issue, health concerns, that is evaluated by a physician, but we provide them with data that they might not otherwise get.
Okay.
And we can help the physician understand what he's looking at, because he or she is generally doesn't understand environmental data.
Right. Understand.
So we work as a team.
Okay. All right. Teamwork's a lot better than I. You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm Chris Plunkett. I'm speaking with Bruce Wolf. He's from Garden State Environmental Services out here in Bergen County. Bruce, we'll talk the air quality. I know you mentioned lead. I actually had to take the class not too long ago, by April 22nd, I think, of this year. Everyone in our type of business and contractors needed to take a lead certification course, 2 days of 16 hours or something to that degree, and then a lead renovator course. So just folks, if you are hiring contractors, they should have these licenses, whether they're mitigators like myself, emergency services, or they do repair work. The identity of it, it's pre-1978 that needs to be documented
yes,
if lead-based paints and things like that?
That is correct. And actually, you raise an important point. In a disaster situation, you may find that during the course of responding to that, you uncover previously unknown environmental issues, such as asbestos insulation behind walls or above ceilings, old molding or other wood that was painted with lead paint. Those are the kind of things that you might just go along with and not really think about until the house gets ripped apart or extensive renovations or emergency response.
Right.
So those things, the contractors need to be aware of those risks and to call in experts should they see something suspicious.
Right. We have in the emergency response tag book, with most towns, municipalities and such, you have a window of 72 hours to come in and do and mitigate and safe off a building or a house. And then you would surmise if there was the lead baits paints there or asbestos, encapsulating piping in commercial spaces. But that gets kind of dicey. So calling a professional like yourself on the scene, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, don't raise any red flags. But you know what? If you call in a person like Bruce to do some sampling or to get an eye on the job, it saves a lot of money down the road if something did go here, you know, went wrong. So I'm a proponent of that. I'm not an alarmist. But when I see these things and they're glaring, and I think there's the rule of thumb, what is it, the New York State guidelines of 10 square feet or of mold or the piping, a linear feet of insulated piping, a lot of gray areas out there, wouldn't you say?
That's right. And if homeowners take it upon themselves to evaluate risks, it can lead to an issue or a problem. So it really should be professionally evaluated because you have contractors there who have become sort of desensitized to those issues, and they'll just sort of plunge forward and start ripping out walls and ripping down pipe, making a bad situation worse.
Yeah, some of the contractors I've run into over the years, they think, we're hocus and pocus and we create a lot more than there actually is. That's because, in the old days, you just smashed everything and then you put it back together without thinking about 4 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line.
That's right.
So the air qualities is one of the techniques you guys look for in testing. You know, I shouldn't say techniques, but more of one of your tools. One of the other things you is, you know, everybody knows the MOLD word. How do we determine, or how does a homeowner determine if she has some water intrusion, if she sees some growth and there needs to be some investigating work? How do you go about that when they call you in?
Sure. First of all, there's a large element of common sense involved with the mold world. Homeowners need to be careful. They need to be alert. They shouldn't be paranoid about it. The sight of a little bit of mold growing on a baseboard or on a ceiling in a bathroom or a foundation wall does not mean that there's an imminent health hazard. So one of the things that we are very careful about is putting the risks in proper perspective, because we know that people are scared and they're emotional and they're worried about their children and their pets. So that kind of perspective is critical to putting in place a rational plan.
Okay.
So homeowners are aware, they see that there's a potential problem. If it's a very small problem, in some cases, non-specialists can handle it. But in other cases, it should be assessed professionally, a reasonable plan put in place, and it be handled with due caution.
Mm. Yeah, if you're just tuned in, I'm Chris Plunkett, this is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm speaking with Bruce Wolf, Garden State Environmental. He's a certified industrial hygienist. I'm going to go to a break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
You're back to Disaster Recovery Hour. This is Chris Plunkett. My guest today is Bruce Wolf. He's an industrial hygienist from Garden State Environmental. He serves the tri-state area. Bruce and I were talking about air quality and possible of detecting a mold growth and things like that, and the common sense is we left off before with some common sense steps you can take. But I want to let's shoot over to the mold end of this of this equation. You know, how does it start, and you know, what are the so-called dangers from it?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, there's a lot of misconceptions about mold. Ultimately, mold growth is all about the water. It's all about sources of moisture. So when we come out to do an investigation, that's one of the first things we're looking for, are what are the sources of moisture that could be contributing to that mold growth. Without it, typically you will not see it. So mold is like any other living organism. It needs water, it needs something to eat, it needs oxygen, and it needs light. So with those components in place, you have everything that you need to have extensive mold growth. The sources of water are very widespread. It can be infiltration through the foundation. It could be a pipe leak. It could be a roof leak. There's all kinds of things that happen in buildings. So an investigation involves, first and foremost, what are the sources of moisture, mm-hmm. and what are the sources of food. So once we determine the patterns of growth, the risk to people is very difficult to define. So when you hear the fear-inducing stories about people that are getting sick and have to move out and all of that, it's a very individualized response. We have some people who live in high mold areas with absolutely no symptoms. We have some people who are exposed to small amounts of mold who get very sick. So one of the difficulties in this arena, and one of the reasons there are no exposure standards, is because of those individual responses.
Now, is that one of the reasons why these are guidelines set by the EPA and the New York State guidelines that we as Jersey folk also adhere to? So it's a moving target, so that's why you really can't put – things can't be put into black and white and saying this is this, and this is this.
Well, there's a couple reasons. One, yes, you're right. Individual responses are very different. The other mitigating factor is that there are often other exposures associated with mold exposure. In a damp building, you are also exposed to things like dust mites and bacteria and viruses and pollen and all the other things that you might be breathing in. science has not found a great way to separate out those exposures to be able to say, yes, specifically these molds are associated with those symptoms. So anecdotally, we know that those exposures can cause a problem in some people, but science is not strong enough to set specific exposure guidelines.
Now, do a majority of your calls and your interviews that you do, are people, do they want you know, the sky to fall? Or do they want just a clear pass? What I mean, when I see some of these issues and I go out and I have to investigate water intrusion, some people, they really want to find mold, and it's amazing.
Well, that's really an interesting phenomenon. I associate it with a medical exam where someone goes for their annual physical. They may spend $1,000 to go through a battery of tests, and the doctor says, well, everything's fine. And they say, wait a minute, I just spent all this money. Can't you find something?
Right.
So I think there's something analogous to this process. So we're very careful to provide objective information and try to put it in perspective for people.
Right. I was called out recently to a job. It was a water intrusion that came through the floor. It also came from above the sill into the basement, finished basement. Another company came out and did the mitigation, and they did nice work. But in walking through with the homeowner, there's someone in the house that has an illness, and she was looking for guarantees. And when I, you know, again, like Bruce just mentioned, you know, there's different degrees. People are susceptible to different types of allergies and such. So for me, it took me all about a minute and a half to realize, you know what, I need Bruce to come in. I need a certified hygienist to come in here and put this person's mind at ease. Because when people have previous or conditions and then they suspect there's mold growth, you know, everything's gonna stop and there's gonna be worse hazards down the line for them. So I like to cut that off at the pass and, you know, bring in a person like Bruce. And again, I've been working with Bruce for quite some time. And Bruce has a good demeanor about him, the way he handles it. If you just tuned in, this is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm Chris Plunkett, your host, the 970 AM, the Apple. And so Bruce, we have this particular job, and she is an individual. She is an individual. Both owners of the homes, they're leaning towards they want to bang for their buck almost to the point, but. It is a crazy phenomenon. It's like I spent $1,000 on a checkup. You know, give me something. I want to sink my teeth into it. As Americans, that's what we like. We're beef eaters anyway. So regarding the mold scenario, but you know what I catch a lot is the commercial spaces when they have water damage and you get that odor because the water hits furniture and it hits the carpet and now it's off gassing these odors and people are equating that right to mold. That's more of an air quality. That's not a growth problem. Is that correct?
Well, they're associated. Okay. Microbial growth is one contributing factor to poor indoor air quality. And, in fact, many types of mold will emit volatile organic chemicals. And those glucans and organic chemicals are what people smell when they associate it with a mold odor. I think everyone has probably smelled the musty, damp kind of old odor associated with mold. It almost smells like wet dirt or wet earth.
Mm-hmm.
Those are organic chemicals that are being emitted by the organisms. So they are a contributing factor to poor indoor air quality.
Now, you know, people calling in sick and saying, well, you know, you have the water damage there. I have my eyes. They're getting teary. I can't breathe properly. Now, where is the validity in such a thing? And again, is it just an individual and they can state those types of things? I'm just perplexed and confused by why people are always looking for something like that to happen to themselves. I don't get it.
Well, I have many years of experience as a public health officer, and this is also analogous to that, where people have vague complaints and they're looking for a cause. So one of the tools that we employ is epidemiological surveys, where we actually talk to a variety of people who are expressing concern and who are displaying symptoms, try to associate those patterns of symptoms with the environmental conditions in the building. So that is a process that we go through that may involve environmental testing. It'll involve interviews with occupants. It will involve moisture testing and some environmental sampling as well. And we then, our job is to put the pieces together of that investigation and come together, come forward with a coherent, reasonable, and practical plan to address those issues. Now, that's not always easy because people don't always understand what the environmental conditions are in their building. They sometimes associate the way they feel at work with things that might not be happening at work or at home. So that's why we look very carefully at the full range of exposures and what do people do, where do they work, where do they play, where do they live. All of those things affect people's health, and that takes some professional judgment to sort through all those factors and try to come up with an answer.
So do you find it more of a psychological or an emotional side, or do you think it's that they're more concrete? Which is the percentages you think?
The answer is both. There certainly is an emotional component to all of this. When people start to talk over the water cooler or over the backyard fence, symptoms magnify. So we understand that. We take that into account. But we also have to look at the hard science. I mean, what is the air quality? And maybe there's some justification for those concerns. So we weed through all of those things, the emotions, the fear, the science, the epidemiology, the health, and all of that. And that's a good summary of what industrial hygiene does. We're sort of puzzle solvers.
Right. Well, you know, in a day of liability and, you know, everybody seems to like to point a finger and then, you know, something happened because this didn't happen prior to, again, being prepared. But when I come to some of these jobs and you start to interview people and look around at the surroundings, you know, you have to cover your bases. And as you would come in, say, let's give an example. A Harry homeowner, you have to deal with them only, okay, possibly their insurance company, depending on the severity of the loss. But if you go into a commercial space, there's a landlord. There's a person who could be subletting that space out to another individual. I had a couple of those not too long ago in New York City. So you had actually three people who were involved in saying, I have problems. The other saying there might be a problem. The other's just denying the problem. Now, you get called in to take care of the job or to investigate if there is a problem. Now, you know, being a certified hygienist, or, you know, I keep on saying certified, you know, Bruce has got years of experience. So at this point, you're on the hook to come up with a game plan for these people to go by. And if you're wrong, you know, and it doesn't appease to the tenant, but yet it's amicable to the other two parties. How do you go about juggling that? Because it's, again, because you're the forefront of and the eyes and ears of the so-called problem.
Right. Well, first of all, we're never wrong.
Oh.
I'd like to believe that.
Oh, two people in one room. Never wrong. I like that.
That's where we rely on our experience and our training. And yes, there can be some complex situations. And honestly, there are some situations without clear resolution. We don't always come up with a perfectly clean answer. However, going through the process is somewhat helpful to people to realize that there is a process in place. Someone's listening to their concerns. We might be ruling out certain hazards that make people feel better. And even if we don't come up with a perfect answer, the process can be healing, and we will also often come up with practical tips for moving forward.
Okay. If you're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour, I'm Chris Plunkett, your host. I'm talking with Bruce Wolf, Gordon State Environmental. I got a couple other things some tips that I want to take from Bruce to give to the listeners. Be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Welcome back. This is Chris Plunkett, your host of the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm speaking with Bruce Wolf, Garden State Environmental. I got some other things I want to shoot at Bruce. But Bruce, you know what? Give me your information and how some of the people can get a hold of you and talk about some of that expertise of yours.
Oh, very gladly. Thankful to slip in a little commercial. You can reach me at Garden State Environmental. Our office number is 201-652-1119. Or you can visit our website at www.gseconsultants.com. There's a lot of information on their website, and we'd be very happy to talk with you about how we might help you deal with environmental and indoor air quality issues.
Yeah. Don't be afraid of that 201 number. I have one, too. Doesn't mean we only stay over here in Jersey.
That's right. We cover New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania.
So we were talking about air quality, mold. Again, that was I kind of do that going flip-flop sometimes. One thing that I did see the other day in a news article is the air quality. You know, everyone's talking about air quality. I mean, there was mold. Now it's the air quality. And obviously, we spend most of our time at work. So we need to be concerned with that. Let's talk a little more about this air quality hot topic.
Sure. It does seem to be on the mind of the media, on people's mind, and even in the regulatory world. We're seeing increased regulatory activity towards indoor air quality. For example, the state of New Jersey recently implemented new regulations governing indoor air quality in all public buildings. And that's a big departure. That's a real focus, and it requires government agencies and schools and other public entities to implement a comprehensive indoor air quality preventive, proactive, and responsive program. So that's an area that we're deeply involved with in helping agencies develop those plans and implement them and providing technical support. But to get back to your original question, especially in the homes, I think there's a number of reasons why indoor air quality is become a bit of a hot topic. And it has a lot to do with, first of all, the way we're building our buildings. If you think back 30 or 40 years, you're not old enough to do that, but I am. Back then, buildings were masonry, they were natural woods, they were hardwoods, they were built to breathe so that there may have been a little moisture coming in, but the moisture would go out.
Right,
there was a little air coming in, a little air going out. Nowadays, we have a focus on energy efficiency, and rightfully so. However, it falls into the category of solving one problem and creating another.
Mm.
So by creating these energy-efficient, airtight buildings, we're trapping contaminants. We're trapping moisture that may enter the building envelope, and we're trapping other contaminants that in years past might have flowed out. So it has something to do with our construction. You know, we live in cardboard boxes now. Homes are built out of materials that support microbial growth.
Right. If you just joined us, you're late, for one thing. You listen to Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm Chris Plunkett. I'm speaking with Bruce Wolf from Garden State Environmental. Yeah, this cardboard box that we're all living in, some live down by the river in this economic times. So now you, what we call, when you and I meet, those are protocols. So you're setting protocols, say, for a sick building syndrome or preventative of a sick building? Is that what I'm seeing?
Well, it depends on the situation. If it's a homeowner with a documented water intrusion and a mold issue, we will do the investigation and prepare detailed specifications that will outline the remediation plan. And that includes environmental controls to protect the occupants of the house during that process, which is critical. So that means that the old myth of whenever you have a mold problem, you have to immediately move out, may not be true. Vast majority of our cases, homeowners live safely in the house during remediation because of the environmental controls that we design. In a occupational setting where you might have an office building where people are complaining of headaches or upper respiratory symptoms and other things sort of associated with what we call sick building syndrome, that's a little more subtle. And, you know, we often are doing investigations that don't have those clear symptoms like water stains or collapsing walls or growing mold. The issues may be more subtle in terms of the amount of fresh air being brought into the system or the operation of the HVAC system or accumulation of water in the cooling pans, etc. So depending on the type of building and depending on the nature of the complaints, it determines the level of our investigation.
So you also need to have a background in construction.
It's a very good point. And in fact, our best consultants are those that have had some construction background. So they understand not only the environmental science, but also the building science. And, you know, building science can be a lot more complex than people realize.
Hmm. So, again, if you just join us, it's Disaster Recovery Hour with Chris Plunkett, speaking with Bruce Wolf, Garden State Environmental. So we have the air quality, we have mold, but not everybody owns a business. Most people own a home, or whether they rent or not. There's got to be a few steps that they can, again, back to that preparedness thing that we keep on hitting home with. There are things that Harry homeowner or Mrs. Harry homeowner can do to prevent, or if she does see the growth, remediate it right then and there, or do you need to bring in you and I, or first you and then me to do the actual mitigation work?
Well, I'd like to answer that on a little broader basis, and that is, what can homeowners do to protect their indoor environment in general? And certainly we'll hit on mold as part of that, but people often don't realize the other risks that exist in a house. And this comes back to something I said in the very beginning, and that's all about common sense and being alert. So clearly one of the things people need to do is to be aware of evidence of water leaks or water intrusion in their home. And they can be kind of subtle. Have you ever laid in your bed and heard a little tapping?
Right.
And you're wondering, is this, Chinese water torture, or is there, what's going on?
Oh, that little man in my head who wants to get out.
There's all kinds of explanations, but they often involve water leaks, whether that's behind a wall in a shower or through the roof into your attic. You don't ignore those kinds of things. You look to understand what's happening and is it impacting on your building materials.
Because you and I see it this time of year because people go on vacation, they seal up their house. And sometimes there's a water problem, but there's that musty odor that goes along because there's the odors coming out of the toilets. There's the odors coming out of the drains. And people think, oh, my God, there's something bad happened. But it's not actually something bad. It's just naturally what comes off these pipes anyway, right?
Well, it comes off, but when the house is not occupied, you've got no air exchange.
So stagnant.
The systems are not working. The air is just sitting there. So everything that's coming up through the systems are just stagnating in the air.
So is it as simple as cracking a window and just moving some air?
Well, that may or may not be okay depending on where you live and the time of year it is. Certainly you wouldn't want to do that in January in Buffalo.
Mm.
But
maybe that's why my aunt is a little strange.
There's always a reason.
Yeah.
But the one of the things we tell people is don't turn your systems off. If it's in the summer, put your air conditioning up so it doesn't come on too often, but let it periodically run. So set it at 80.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, set your heat down, but make sure it comes on periodically.
Right.
So rather than shut down, just turn them down or up.
Again, this is Chris Plunk, the Disaster Recovery Hour. If anyone didn't hear you before, why don't we give that contact information for you again?
Thank you. If you would like to talk with us at Garden State Environmental, you can reach us at 201-652-1119 or our website, gseconsultants.com.
That's great. Bruce, it was a pleasure. We were on many jobs together the last couple of years. And I definitely appreciate you helping me out because, it's a lot of people have these gray areas of mold and air quality. Again, Bruce just gave you the contact information. I'm Chris Plunkett. If you want to contact me, you can go ahead and email me at cplunkett@cppems.com or my website, cppems.com. I get a plethora of phone numbers if you want. They're on the websites. The one that's live 24/7 is 917-567-9333. Again, I want to thank my guest, Bruce Wolf from Garden State Environmental. I'm your host for the Disaster Recovery Hour. We're here every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. Hopefully you're awake. I am. I like to listen to myself. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. Take care.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.